and car talk. No driving gloves. From exotics to Brasera to I'll get to it someday. Where experience, knowledge, and controversy share the same seat. Buckle up and hang on for the ride. Now for your host for No Driving Gloves, John and Derek.
Damn, Derek, you just made me think of Tone Loc.
Let's do it.
Oh, Let's do it.
Yeah, I remember
Funky Cold Medina.
Yeah. My cousin died of a Funky Cold Medina.
I think you got the wrong guy there. Isn't Flavor Flav, hats off to him. I'll give him hats off, not car related. Stepping up and he's sponsoring the women's water polo team at the Olympics because he heard a lot of those women were having to work second and third jobs just to be able to afford to be in Paris. So guy from the 70s or 80s, you know, stepping up. I mean, I don't know if he's doing it, get his name out there again, probably a little bit, but still nice to see him write the check.
So Flavor Flav did that. I didn't hear that. Did he question to do it? Did he have to sell one of his necklace clocks?
He was not wearing it on the interview I saw him on today.
He had to sell it. All right, John, how's it going? It's Thursday night, 9 o'clock.
I need a fight.
10 o'clock Eastern, whatever time it is off to the west. So what better time?
Come on, it's easy.
No driving.
10 Eastern, 9 Central, 8 Pacific, and 7 California time.
California. You skipped mountain.
Yeah, no, I said mountain in my head.
Yeah, okay.
It was blocked by all the ranges and valleys in my brain.
You know, time zones are interesting part of transportation history, but we can get into that in another night.
That just kind of blows my mind.
Whoa, mind blown.
Like my happy little seven behind me?
It's pretty cute. It's got a very Roger Rabbit vibe. You know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which we talked about a few weeks ago on the Cars as Stars and Movies episode, whatever the title of that one was, because, of course, not only is there a cartoon car, well, actually multiple cartoon cars movie, but the movie is about automotive history, actually the history of the interstate highway system. But I digress. The face on your little Lotus 7 Caterham Super Sport, whatever it is very Who Framed Roger.
Yeah, the caption at the bottom, this is something I used to have on my website from USA7s.net, as everything else is just transport. That's what's behind me in my wonderful red shirt. And I never said it during our movie episode. One of the things that sticks out in my mind about Who Framed Roger Rabbit, other than Jessica Rabbit, is one of the gentlemen that worked for my father. Unfortunately, he passed away during his tenure with my father. He used to have a blue S10 that was lowered with a shell on it. Surprise, lowrider S10. And he was going to paint Roger Rabbit across the hood and had this graphic that would went across the hood and door and onto the topper of Roger Rabbit being splattered by his truck.
Nice. Nice.
No, that's a pretty sad.
Yeah. It's got to be the scene where he and Jessica are tied, you know, chained and tied, and they're slowly getting lowered into the dip, but then they're saved.
I don't remember that scene. You think I'd remember the bondage scene?
It's not after 9:30.
It's 9:04, not 9:45. Sorry about that.
Too early.
So, topic, mind blown. Some of the stuff that's happened in automotive history or recently that we just go, it's I started off with the Tone Loc reference, but there's also, was it CNC Music Factory that had the song Things That Make You Go I guess that might have been better.
We just turn this into a music podcast. I mean,
because you get tired, they do, and I'd love to do a car song, but it's so damn hard to play music on podcasts.
Yeah. Well, what we need to do is just reach out to the musicians, recorded those songs we want to talk about, have them on as guests to talk about why they chose to sing that song, perform that song, whatever terminology you want to use. And then, well, they just have to give us permission to play it because we got to talk about it.
And actually, it takes two signatures. You have to have the person who wrote the music. You have to have the person who performed the music. You also have the person who owns publishing rights to the music. There's a lot of signatures involved. I actually just listened to a We'll say Gordon Firemark. He's the podcast lawyer. He just did a long presentation on how to play music into your podcast. And the long story short is don't, unless you have an like iHeartRadio podcast. I always wonder how Spike Ferrison on Spike's Car Radio gets away with playing music at the beginning and end of his. But then again, he's partners with Jerry Seinfeld. So I assume his production company might have a big dollar license somewhere.
So those of you that are waiting for the automotive music topic to come up on the show, it's going to be a while, unless you buy us a lot of coffees.
Lots of coffee. And I don't drink that much coffee, but I do. I will consume every cup that you decide to purchase for us using the QR codes up at the, there we go. Yep. Something like that over there and down there. There we go.
Thankfully, most of our folks that are part of the No Driving Gloves community do the audio part of this, and they don't have to watch that. So
I was looking like I was having a spasm, like one of our presidential can commonly same color.
So about Mind Blown, what has been blowing your mind lately? Because I got a few things on my list here.
Well, the one I mentioned pre-show that just jumped out and made me literally mind blown. A couple of years ago, a year ago, we talked about Ford and filing the patent for the self-repossessing car, where the technology in self-driving would allow Ford Motor Credit or whatever financial institution that was contracted to say, hey, you're late with the payment, repossess the car, and the car, they push a button, the car would drive itself to the repo lot. Really question why the hell you would buy a car with that feature. And I read that, hey, Ford decided to let that patent go. Guess maybe our podcast got to them. But they followed it up a few days later with a new patent about tattletale cars, would be the simplest way of putting it. That if you exceed the speed limit by a certain amount, whether it be 70 and a 65 or whatever arbitrary numbers are decided in the contract with law enforcement, that Ford vehicle would then report to Ford that you've exceeded this speed. And then Ford would then turn that data over to the local police department, and they would be able to mail you a ticket. Hey, don't need speed cameras anymore, because I hear they all have like 18 pounds of copper in them, at least according to the Facebook meme. I'm not sure, but feel free to find out yourself.
Yeah, if any of our listeners want to check that out, feel free.
I haven't had time to verify it, but I'm just going by what Facebook tells me. And last time I was talking to Mark Zuckerberg, he said, hey, they have their truth police and they don't ever make a mistake. But I guess, Derek, you're a Chevy guy.
But here's the thing, John. Let me just stop you right there, because you know, you bring this up, and we did talk about the self-driving repossession feature that's, you know, being patented. They've released this, but and it's mind-blowing, but to me, this started years ago, and my mind was blown years ago. Because it's nothing more than building into the computer systems in the vehicles what insurance companies have been doing for a few years now. I think it was Progressive Insurance, if I remember correctly. They'd send you that. They would send you that little device to plug into your OBD reader, and it would record your data so they could give you discounts on your insurance. Okay, people. Those, you're recording everything about your driving habits. Do you think they only pay attention to the good? No, they're going to pay attention to all the times you speed, all the times you're braking hard, all the times you're doing something that the computer system recognizes and records as not the best driving habits. Okay. So all Ford Motor Company and the car companies are doing is taking a page from that. And, you know, and the I think OnStar was capable of it, and a couple others, where if your vehicle was stolen and the police called it in and it had the feature, they could shut the vehicle down. Well, here's the thing, that right there should have been, I mean, not really mind blowing to those of us in the automotive world, because I mean, that's pretty easy to do once you have a computer system in a car. But I mean, those were some of the beginnings of all of this happening. I mean, it's because if they can shut your car down when it's stolen, and they can unlock your car when you lock your keys in it, as long as you call them, how do people not think this is where we're headed? That they're going to be able to control everything in that car. And it goes right to the other thing we discussed about subscriptions, because they still, every little detail in that computer, they can control.
And you make a good point with that. And excuse me, I'm sorry, but I used to know the exact numbers, and I'm trying to think when OBD2 was introduced, and are we at OBD3 now? I can't remember, but in the ECU, and it was talked about when these things first came out, that there were all these open channels that could transmit. And I guess we're filling up those channels. And there was like 83 of them or something in these original computers 20 plus years ago. And some of the stuff they did talk about is that, hey, there could be a beacon on the side of the interstate that your car would transmit its speed to. And then they would instantly know. And of course, it would be addressed to your car. So because you register your car, the authorities would know what it is. Or potentially when you went by one of these beacons on, say, an exit ramp or an entrance ramp where you're going to be accelerating. Hopefully you are supposed to accelerate on an entrance ramp as you enter the road. I know some people are challenged, but it would transmit the real-time emissions data to this beacon. And this was really big in California, because then all of a sudden they don't need to smog check you yearly or whatever. They could smog check you real time anytime they wanted to. Plop that beacon down, get everybody who drives down the 405 getting on at La Hacienda. Maybe that's an exit or not. You can let me know. But that's where we're at. I mean, there's so much two-way communication with cars anymore. And I mentioned it a few episodes ago, and that one of the tech podcasts I listen to, she mentions it quite often. Mm-hmm. That Chrysler actually builds, or Stellantis, a RAM that contains all 2008 data or electronics. There's no transmitting. There's nothing to this vehicle. I mean, it's a newer bot, looks like a new Dodge RAM, but the tech is 2008 or 2009. So it eliminates all of this. The only vehicle still sold, still about $40,000, $45,000. But it's, you know, it's tempting. Other than that vehicle, everything else bought new is talking to the manufacturer, talking to the insurance companies, talking to a satellite here, talking to a satellite there, talking to a third party here, talking to whatever cybersecurity firm has a problem this week, whatever hacker can get in, whatever Chinese thing gets in. And speaking of that, your ECU, if it's communicating with Ford or General Motors or BMW or Volkswagen, or I'm not singling out any one manufacturer. A lot of those chips come from China or Chinese-oriented companies. I do realize there's a boycott, and Porsche had a big problem with chips that came from China. But do you think that the manufacturers of these chips might be slipping something in there too? Not saying they are, not saying they aren't, but my forgetting what term I want to call myself here, but
curmudgeon, you know,
fearmonger. I'm just always looking at conspiracy theorists. There's what I'm looking for. It's always, I mean, nothing you can do about it. Besides, you know, going out buying a 64 and a half Mustang. Jab, Derek. Derek has left the show.
Moving on.
What's blowing your mind, Derek?
Well, you know, John, I've got a couple things, but I think we touched on it last week, but it wasn't part of the main topic. It was just a little bit of the news that literally had just happened hours before we recorded. But of course, last week, literally, you know, just a few hours ago last week, Corvette, General Motors Chevrolet division, unveiled the ZR1 Corvette. And this new Corvette has twin turbo internal combustion V8 engine that produces over 1,000 horsepower, 1,064 horsepower, as I recall. I don't know. My mind is not blown by that, because of course I've kind of known where Corvette was headed with the C8 and their plans that were laid out that's the good fortune of, you know, knowing people at General Motors and getting to hear some of the inside stuff and not talk about it on your podcast and things like that. But the mind-blowing factor isn't that we can pull this off. It isn't that we can build a 1,000-horsepower engine, that we can, you know, make this amazing piece of machinery. The mind-blowing part is, do we really need a car on the road that has over 1,000 horsepower? Have you seen the capabilities of Americans driving on our roads today with cars that have 200 horsepower, maybe even the cars that have like 100 horsepower? They barely can control those vehicles. And yes, this is a different group of people that are buying this car, but do those people really need 1,000+ horsepower? What are you honestly going to do with that power?
I'm going to strap on my New Balances. I'm going to go to the car show and I'm going to say it's got 1,064 horsepower. No, I actually,
your Mustang doesn't.
Well, I was going to say, I actually heard a little story behind how we arrived at 1,064 horsepower, because if I remember right, my numbers are going to be slightly off here. Base C8, 485 horsepower. Z06, 650 horsepower, give or take. The ZR1 was supposed to come out with 850 horsepower. And Ford did this little thing, and they came out with the Mustang GTD with 850 horsepower. And that's when the GM guy said, no, we can't match a Mustang. Go balls to the wall. And they had to surpass also the Demon 170, whatever it is, 1,024 horsepower. So that's how we end up with our 1,064 horsepower in Corvette.
That's one story.
That's one story.
But if you talk and listen to Taj, who just retired, maybe yesterday was his last day or today. I don't remember if it was 31st. I don't remember. I think. But anyway, Taj is retiring. The ZR1 was his, I'll call it swan song. But that was the absolute top horsepower they could get out of it. That
reliably.
They did not, right, reliably. They did not hold back. They didn't. It was always the plan to make this engine have as much horsepower as possible. They don't believe, and General Motors with Corvette doesn't believe at stopping at even numbers anymore. They're not going to sit back and say, oh, it's got 1,000 horsepower. Oh, it's got 1,025 horsepower. You know, they, for many years, have just said, what is the absolute horsepower we can get out of the end reliably? And that is what.
See, I believe there's a little bit of truth to both the stories that probably can't match Mustang, because everybody knows Zora's next, and it's supposed to come with 1,200-ish with its combination hybrid, blah, blah, blah. But one of the journalists I heard reviewing this 1,064 horsepower Corvette was, he had driven something that was 1,000 horsepower rear wheel drive, and it was a little squirrely. And he had also driven the Koenigsegg something with just about 1,200 horsepower with rear-wheel drive. And it was a little bit squirrely. 1,064 horsepower it's a lot. But you're going, hey, I can drive that because I can do it with name whatever car. But most cars with that kind of power are all-wheel drive. You know, the new Bugattis are all-wheel drive, etc. This is a rear-wheel drive Corvette, which is going to have all kinds of electric driver aids, and without electric driver aids, nobody could drive this thing except Randy Popst and six other guys in the world. So my question is, do we really need 1,064 horsepower rear wheel drive car that's going out to the masses? And I guarantee you, I will 99% guarantee you, every single ZR1 sold will come with a driving school. Basically, as the
to Spring Mountain.
Any high horsepower sports car anymore comes with a driving school, because it's a liability waiver. Because if the guy goes out, buys his Corvette, kills himself on the way home from the dealership, the family can't come back and say, you sold him a car that was too powerful for his abilities. And GM goes, well, we offered him a school. He should have went to the school before he drove the car. And that's why all these cars come with these high performance driving schools. I said that years ago on this show also, but it's one of those things, and we haven't made much of a secret of it. And we're, Derek and I are exploring how to really talk about it. It's one of the frustrations of the car hobby.
I got 1,064 horsepower. Well, that's just not enough. I need 1,100 horsepower. Well, I got 1,100 horsepower. I need 1,250.
You know, do we need 2,000 horsepower electric Lotuses that crash, or Lotus that crash into barriers right off the line at Goodwood? Do we need 1,000 horsepower Corvettes that with anybody with 150, 200 grand, we haven't had a price yet that I know of, can go out and buy, dealer markup excluded? Do we need this stuff? I mean,
to me, John, to me, the what should be the clear evidence that this is really unnecessary in the everyday world is the fact that the Corvette race cars that go out, you know, for Le Mans racing and all that are detuned. They're detuned down to, I think, I'm trying to remember if it's like, there's like 500 or 600 horsepower limit at Le Mans, something like that in the class that, that Corvette runs in. So if you need to detune the car for racing, now granted, it's the whole balance of power, whole trying to level the playing field, blah, blah, blah. But you're basically saying we have professional drivers who are being put in these things. You know, Andy Pilgrim's been on the show before. You know, these guys that go out and do this, they're not driving 1,000 horsepower while they're out there. They're handling 500 to 600 horsepower. Technical tracks, yes. But if those cars are out there racing and doing the stuff that they're capable of doing detuned, why in the world do we need 1,000 horsepower out on the street? Now, if you're top fuel drag, you know, if you're drag racing, top fuel, all that, yeah, high horsepower is where it's at. But just why it makes no sense to me. And you know, is it kind of cool that we're having horsepower wars again, like we did in the 60s and, you know, into the early 70s before, you know, oil crisis hit? It's interesting. But even back then, when there were the horsepower wars, and we were talking like 300-400 horsepower, right? That's where we were in the 60s and 70s with the horsepower wars. People back then were questioning that much horsepower, whether we needed it or not.
So we didn't have driver aids back then, give you that. But
yeah, you give it that.
You said the fuel crisis brought those cars to an end. It was as much the fuel crisis as the insurance industry.
I was just about to go into the insurance questions.
So it's, but money's irrelevant anymore. I mean, you're paying 200 grand, 200 grand for a Corvette with its 1,000 horsepower or whatever. So what if your insurance is $1,000 a month on the car or whatever? It's, and more than likely your company bought you the car. So, you know, it's a corporate expense or however you want to quote launder the money. Money's not relevant to toys like this anymore. There's more money out there. Somebody somewhere has money trees and they have not provided Derek or nor I seat. But in your support, not defense, the average Formula One car only has 825, 850 horsepower, and it's half the weight. So that's like having 1,600 horsepower or whatever. But, and these are the most professional drivers in the world. And these cars now have tons of driver's aids on them too. And they still lose control and have, I mean, 1,064 horsepower. It's nothing. Get out there in Montana on a straight desert highway that's reasonably paved. You're fine until a tumbleweed crosses your path. Tell us, I don't know, do they have squirrels in Montana? I don't know. Tell some turtle crosses, some turtle wanders out into the road. Some cardboard box comes blowing across. Then that's literally when the vet hit the fan. I mean, it's, I don't see a need for this horsepower. And I believe you, I don't know if you and I talked about it in the show or after the show a little bit last week. The numbers are neat to say, but give me a good looking car. Give me a car that, you know, handles. It's, we played a, we discussed in Leno and him talking about driving his Morgan three-wheeler, buzzing down the road, clicking and clacking and wind in his hair and bugs in his teeth and probably blowing a little bit of oil. And he goes tearing around a corner and he sees a cop and he thinks, and he pulls himself over and the cop slowly pulls up and pulls out behind him and says, is there a problem? And he goes, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to go that fast. The cop goes, what do you mean? You're only going like 35 miles an hour. And it's so much more fun to drive a slow car fast than a fast car fast. I mean, you can get, I've got a Lotus 7 depiction behind me. And my Lotus 7 that I had, the Caterham 7, had about 140 horsepower, weighed just over 1,000 pounds. It's too much power for that car. At the same time, I had a friend that had what was the Caterham Super Light R, which was 250 or 280 horsepower and weighed about 1,200 pounds. That's too much power. When I thought about buying another Caterham, I wanted to get the 180 or the 160, which is the dead base motor, dead base car, because the pleasure in that car is you could use all that power and not worrying about killing yourself and having to do insane things. I don't need a car that goes 200 miles an hour. I don't need a car that goes 150 miles an hour. I don't track. Maybe if you track, it's a different story. And I mean, everybody has a different, yes, I guess I just saw Phil, but the Plaid is all wheel drive. Mm-hmm. We're not 9:45. It's a big dick contest. And at some point,
it's after 9:30. It's good enough.
And at some point your dick's too big to be of any good because it's going to hurt something. And sometimes your horsepower number is going to get so big, it's going to hurt something. And in this case, it's going to be you. You know, I'm sorry, it's pretty blunt, but that's the way it is. That's all it is who's got the biggest nads, who can say they have the biggest nads, because everybody who plays the game can write the check. I'm not saying everybody can write the check, but there's enough people that can write this check to justify it. And the Zora might be a little bit different. It's all-wheel drive. It's hybrid. There's technology involved. And to me, that's cool. Phil said something about the Plaid. That's kind of cool. And I said it last week. Want to go? And yes, we did talk about it on the show, because why do we need 1,064 horsepower? Why do we need 1,500 horsepower? Electric cars have made horsepower numbers irrelevant. The way they decide to program the car, that's how fast you go. I'm sure they can make the Plaid go faster if the tires could stick to the ground, mm-hmm. if the tires would stick to the rims. I'm sure the Plaid could accelerate fast enough. It would spin the wheels faster than the tires. But Derek, I don't know if it's a mind-blowing thing. It's just a confusing thing that horsepower wars are over. When Elon Musk put the Plaid out, I kind of said it, horsepower wars are over. Now we need something else. And hell, the Plaid handles. Plaid does everything great. We referred to Leno and the Wraith probably in an off show comment. But Leno also had the show on about his new Rolls-Royce Spectre. And while he talked about how great the Tesla Plaid is, and he bought it for performance and he bought it for this. The Rolls-Royce is an electric car. The Spectre is exactly what a Rolls-Royce is supposed to be. Smooth, quiet. You know, he basically said the car's so damn heavy that the regenerative braking, when he goes out and he comes home, he's got more power in the batteries than he left with because of that. Electric has made so much of this irrelevant. Computers have made so much of this irrelevant. It goes back to, and I said it last week, I'll say it again this week, and I've said it dozens of times on the show. I'd rather look good than feel good. And let's get some styling back. Let's get some coolness, you know, back. Let's get some, where I got on this tangent because of the Zora. Let's get some of that technology and engineering. That's what's going to turn the kids on and get them into the hobby. 1,064 horsepower out of a twin turbo flat plane V8, you know, doesn't really turn me on. But when you start telling me how you're doing it electronically and you're doing this and you're merging gasoline motors with electric motors. That's one of the cool things about the new NSX is being able to do this. And then the NSX was actually programmed that if you modified the gasoline motors, the electric motors could adapt. That is computer programming well beyond anything that I had ever dreamt of. There's blowing my mind.
Yeah, exactly. And for anybody listening, roll back to competition discussion there with Corvette and seeing we can't play music, feel free to overlay Balls by AC/DC while we talk about the, competition of horsepower.
That's exactly it. I got the biggest balls of them all.
Exactly. All right, John, what else is blowing your mind right now in the automotive world?
I want to say Stellantis.
Okay, why?
The number of executives that have run from that company. The fact that I just recently read, and I've been not shy at saying it at all. Ever since the Fiat Chrysler merger, I've always said Dodge is done, Chrysler's done, blah, Jeep and Ram are here to stay. And now the reports I'm reading are Stellantis is talking about and chopping Alfa Romeo and Maserati now. Not talking about chopping Chrysler and Dodge, but killing Alfa Romeo and Maserati. Those are the core Italian that should go with, that one really caught me off guard. I know Fiat struggled in this country and they've got the new 500E BART coming and kind of cool, interesting, hoping to see that. But even our local Maserati, Alfa Romeo, formerly Fiat dealership that I kind of have always despised up until recently due to a change in owner, an ownership structure change in that. Don't hate them just as much. But that one's just blowing my mind that we're going to see a big paring down, I think, of some legacy names. And I think Stellantis is going to be the first one to do it because they're losing money faster than I can't come up with who loses money faster? A horned drunk on New Year's Eve in Vegas?
Sure, let's go with it.
I don't know, but I mean, the executives that are running, the executives that are being fired, I think I saw a headline today that said Stellantis is offering buyouts for some of their top executives. I mean, this is a company that's run by car people. Isn't it Ralph Giles or something that used to run, SRT and all of that? And that's all a shell of itself before. No more Vipers, no more Hellcats, no more Demons, no more SRT8s, no more. It's Trackhawks. I mean, the Rubicon V8 Jeep is gone. It's just becoming a company with a lot of old products and no excitement.
Well, and I think we've said it for a long time, though, John, is that Stellantis is kind of the brand of dead and dying brands. I mean, it seems to be what they built their platform.
I can't remember. Stellantis is a merging of Fiat, Chrysler, Renault, and somebody. Peugeot, is it not?
Peugeot, I think. Yeah.
Because I was thinking it's another one of these things, because I guess you can kind of go mind blown, but I could have told you if I was aware of it really happening in 2000, I could have told you that, or 2020, I could have told you this was going to be the end result with Recaro going bankrupt this week, announcing their bankruptcy. Legendary seat manufacturer, been in existence for 50, 60 years, we'll say 55 years. They sold out to a, I'm having a horrible time with
private equity firm.
Yeah, they sold out to a private equity firm and 4 years later, they're broke.
However, John, and I read an article, I haven't dug into it, but I did read an article that was very interesting because Recaro Automotive Division, because it is separate from the other Recaro, like aviation seats, things like that, that are out there. About a year or two ago, they built a new headquarters in Michigan. And the point of the article was they found it interesting that only the German division has filed bankruptcy. The article posed the theory that it may possibly be the private equity firms actually kind of a chess move, if you will, of getting rid of the German side and moving everything to the American division. And well, I haven't dug into it further, but it posed, it wasn't that Recaro racing seats are going away. It's that they're moving, they're getting rid of the German section and bringing everything to the US.
Well, I'm not going exactly there, but that's the path I'm going down. When private equity gets involved, there's a game plan. And I am a fan of the movie Wall Street from 1988. I am a fan of the statement, greed is good. As bad as that might be to say in 2024, but that's the way private equity rolls. And when private equity gets involved, there's a end game in sight. And that end game isn't making sure you have the most plushest leather seats cradling your buttocks. That is making sure you have the most plushest leather wallets cradling your buttocks. And they could care less about yours. It's theirs. It's all about their wallet, their butt, and being comfortable.
There's four words that they like, John. Show me the money.
No, I don't. I think there's four words they like. Money, 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 money. They know the money's going to be, it's coming. They just are ready for it. There's no showing it to them. They expect it. And this is, you know, it's what killed Chrysler. I mean, when was it Cerberus Capital bought Chrysler, the holding company, when they, you know, after Daimler came in and screwed him and the next whatever. That's the way private equity works. You buy the cake, you cut it into little pieces. You know, you buy the cake for $20, you cut it into 8 pieces and sell them for $5 a piece and you double your money. That's the way it works. And that's what they're doing here is Recaro, you know, maybe they have to do this, like you said, and get rid of the Germans so that they can part this out because maybe the Germans don't want it to go that way. But for the equity company to make their money, and that's all it is a private equity company has a game plan to get out of here and make their money so they can go out and buy their 1,064 horsepower Corvettes all day long. I can't say mind blown. I'd say, hey, business as usual. You know, you don't like it. I don't insert political commentary here or whatever, but that's the world we live in, and there's nothing we're going to do to change it. And I don't care if you're an elephant or a jackass. What's blowing your mind in addition to that stuff?
Well, you don't have to call me names, John. God.
Well, you are putting on a few pounds there, you elephant.
I've lost weight recently.
So you're a jackass. Yeah, it's kind of odd you're wearing a blue hat and I'm wearing a red shirt. But
I've been called better by worse people. Isn't that how it goes? What else is blowing my mind? Well, I mean, seeing we're on a somewhat political route here, John, and you're having the political bend to the show.
Watch out. Jason's got a funny little kiss your ass.
I don't know what that is. But, you know, it's unfortunate, honestly. I mean, as we know, politics has taken a very divisive road over the last, say, 8 to 10 years or so.
Ever since social media.
Yeah, basically. So let's go like 15 years or so. And that's exactly where I'm headed, John, is social media. And again, mind blown, but mind not blown, right? Obviously, I'm from the generation, like the generation below us, John, is the generation that really blew up on social media and has made money on it and things like that. And, you know, okay, I will see some of the reels that happen. I'll see some of the stuff and it pops up now and then. And maybe it's just because I'm a little old man deep down inside, but I don't understand some of these like Facebook reels and different videos that are out there because I'm watching them and there's these ones I'm seeing now. I don't know why I'm seeing them. Well, when I saw the first couple and then clicked on one, I'm sure that's what led the algorithm to send me every single one that's out there. But they're videos, these short reels inside professional paint booths. of like a fender or a quarter panel or a door or something that someone has just painted, and they hold the camera back a ways and it looks pretty good because it's still wet, right? And they got the light just right on it. And then they take and they pan the camera over it, and you see the runs in it, and you see the, you know, maybe the dry spray of the clear in a spot. And it's all very intentional that you see it. And what I don't understand is why you're in a professional booth, you're putting it on your social media name. You're likely in the automotive profession because you're in a professional paint booth. And I get that you might think it's funny, but I guess to me, if I saw that, I would find out who you are, and I would never go to that shop because I don't want my parts, even if they were then stripped and repainted. I don't want that. And also, like, I hope you're the owner of the shop or you're paying for these materials yourself, because that's a lot of material waste in a world where materials are really expensive. I know I'm sounding like an old man, get off my lawn right now, but I just don't understand why this is entertaining or why this is interesting to people. There's a lot of white here. So
believe it or not, I got a beard and everything here, and it seems to be all
you got more white than me, John. So
it's distinguished. I haven't seen any of these videos, and I'm not even grasping what you keep saying. Is I'm filming a video of me painting a car and then showing you how crappy of a job I do. The only time I ever want to show you how crappy of a job I want to do, I want to post videos that Facebook's not going to let me post.
I'm totally
lost on this one.
It's ridiculous, and it's blowing my mind that anyone would want to put that out there.
Maybe it's for views. I mean, I guess if you look at how crappy this guy did, and we've got 10,000 views. I mean, maybe we should put out a video of, you know, this is how crappy a work we do. This is how crappy a work we do. And I mean, maybe that'll get us our 10,000 viewing hours.
Yeah, I'm going to build one of my wood spoke wheels for the Duryea with like crooked limbs off the tree out back. So it's all like the spokes are all crooked and jagged. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. Look, I've upset him so much, he took his headphones off and he's walking away. Mind blown. I've finally got John to leave the podcast. It's all mine. All mine. So Jason just jumped in the comments. Guys, we're coming to the end of the show. We only got about 10 minutes left. So if you got comments, you got questions, questions, comments, concerns, quandaries, anything of that nature, get it in. We love to hear the comments. We love reading them. We love answering your questions. Jason just brought up one. Speaking of paint booth, how is the Hupmobile coming along? I am not sure how that is connected, Jason. How does the speaking of a paint booth bring to mind my Hupmobile? Is it just because you work on things sometimes in the paint booth? But the Hupmobile is coming along swimmingly. And actually, the brand new spoked wheels are I believe they're probably being shipped this week up to my father's shop up in Michigan, so we can put the new wheels on the Hupmobile. And diverging from our mind-blown topic, although maybe not, because it blows my mind when I hear an antique vehicle with wood spokes drive by and they make noise. Everyone knows I'm trying to preserve the Hupmobile, and John is coming back slowly, slowly. However, there are safety factors that you cannot avoid. And if you have wood spoked wheels and they're not in good condition, please, please, please have them rebuilt by a wheelwright, so that they are done correctly and they are safe to drive on the road. That's PSA for this evening, folks. Make sure your wood is good.
Wood is good. But I thought Jason was bringing up your Hupmobile about the paint booth. I thought you were ready for paint. And I think that's what he was hinting at.
Whoa. It's not getting painted. So we're preserving it. Remember, it's a conservation. I don't even remember which Hemmings. I'll pull up next week. I'll bring the Hemmings magazine issue and I'll tell you which Hemmings to go get. Read the article. It's all about functional conservation. In other words, the car is being conserved, preserved, original paint that's on it, and being made functional.
I actually saw a YouTube ad this week. I'm doing deep dives into woodworking videos. And one of the ads that popped up was this new finish you can spray on your wood, and it lays down nice and smooth in that. And the woman really likes it, and her husband's in conservation because as it begins to wear, you're able to scuff it a little bit and then add a new layer to it without damaging. It's protecting the historical artifact or historical wood piece that's under it. Made me think of you. I don't have any idea of the legitimacy. I saw the ad. It's never replayed, so I can't send you one.
I need to look into that. That sounds interesting.
So you could paint the automobile with that, and then you could just scotch it. When you go out, you go mudding, you got to take the mud off, you just Scotch-Brite it down and spray it.
Why would I not mix my own polymers that I know how to use that I can spray that are reversible with something like, you know, depending on what. You know, obviously I would do testing on the original paint that's on the car, but I can clearly encapsulate that paint with a polymer and maybe a blend of polymers that would then be removable with, you know, either some type of spirits or toluene, something of that nature that's not going to impact the paint. Why would I want to use something abrasive that if I went too far, I would damage the original paint?
Because she'd use like a white Scotch-Brite and it wouldn't do anything more than remove the dirt.
But still, you go too far, you're going to start having micro abrasion on the paint.
But what if you use a polymer and then you accidentally use a polymer and you screw up the finish? It's just as bad.
What about polygamy?
I don't need a restoration project, Jason.
Okay.
which you bring up polygamy. I guess what? Mm-hmm. Bits of trivia that I've learned that we can just go off of. Now that we're after 9:45, we can talk about whatever we want. I believe it was the state of Utah that has just, first time ever, topped the list of the most easily irritable drivers, or the state that has the most road rage.
You taught that somewhere?
I taught that somewhere.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Derek and I had an interview for an hour before this with somebody, so we're well into the show here, guys.
Yeah.
Jason, John needs a restoration project, you say. What kind of restoration project do I need? This person keeps bothering me all the time during primetime Suits watching as I'm trying to get through the ninth season about projects and cool cars. Give me a suggestion. What restoration project does the John need? Left him speechless.
Me or Jason?
I don't care.
No.
What would be a good project car for me?
You need to get back to your mini truck days, man. Go find a beat up mini truck in somebody's garage and restore it.
I've passed on so many little Isuzu trucks recently, and one was actually a old mini truck that could. Dad chimes in with a 62 Chrysler. Mm-hmm. I said little. Jason's chiming in with, Jason's on the same wavelength as Derek. He said original mini. Derek said original mini truck. I don't have a garage big enough for a 62 Chrysler.
Either that, or you need to finally bite the bullet and get your CRX.
I don't want to restore that. I want it done. But a buddy of mine, if you're out there watching, KC, I guess would be his initials. He just went ahead and he's a VW guy, and he just scored I think it's a flat window Beetle, drove it home, 500 miles, hard top, very cool patina to it. And I heard Seinfeld talking a few weeks ago, and I think it was Jerry and Zuckerman and Spike. They were all talking that, you know, a good Porsche 356, beginner Porsche 356 is a Volkswagen Beetle. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but, and we were right before I got on air here, we were watching an old episode of Seinfeld, and it's when Kramer's in California and he's driving around in a Karmann Ghia convertible and a girlfriend's going nuts over it and kicking myself. Cause I had a guy regular at the cigar shop, original owner, Karmann Ghia convertible. And, you know, he had it in his garage up until about 4 years ago and needed restored, but
I'm not as big of a fan of the convertibles. I love the coupe look. Karmann Ghia has a great body style. I think not so much convertible, but I like the styling.
Yeah, I probably would agree with you. Part of me, I was leaving a parking lot today and I saw one of the new Ford Broncos in a two-door. And I said a few months ago, I kind of like the Bronco Sport. Now the Bronco full-size Bronco two-door is growing on me. That would be a cool truck to have if it was only available in a hardtop. Not a removable hardtop, a hardtop. And I don't know. Jason's agreeing with you. Yes, Coop, on the Karmann Ghia. And now that I've lived in Alabama so long, I love convertibles. I just, like I said, I don't think I'd ever use a convertible in this state. Just especially something that old, too hard to put the top up and down.
Mm-hmm.
So we got anything else that's blowing our minds, or should we go ahead and cruise on down the road? Ease on down the road.
Well, with that, don't know that anyone's listening anymore, John. No, I don't really have anything else that's blowing my mind necessarily. That's a big topic cover.
I'm more of a Stingray guy, Jason. If you could, part of my dream car garage would be a 78 to 82 Corvette, but, just because you can go anywhere with them and there's parts for them. I'm not a big...
You just contradicted yourself. You said you're a Stingray fan.
I'm not a mid-year Corvette fan.
Those are the Stingrays.
No, I'm Stingray, one word.
Oh, you're making the decision. Okay. you got to make that distinction.
Yeah. And not C8 Stingray, one word.
Ah, the semantics of the Corvette world.
I was reading the history of Faces Corvette. His 84 Corvette. They made a reference to the red stripe down it being like referring to BA's van. I don't understand why Faces Corvette wasn't black with a red stripe. Things that keep me up at night.
I don't know.
Nah, Jason, I still would probably, if I was doing a mid-year, the convertible with six taillights just to annoy all the Corvette aficionados and no backing lights so that it could be a 64 and a half Corvette Stingray.
Ouch. Now, what about the convertible with the removable hardtop?
No, ugly.
Well, come on. See, I don't mind the convertible with removable hardtop. I kind of like I like it even better on the early C3s, like the 68, 69s with the removable hardtop.
The removable hardtop, yeah.
That's a good look on the third generation. Gee, Jason, thanks for bringing this into the Corvette world. God.
Well, we started in the Corvette world. Well. We halfway started in the Corvette window.
No. The split window is on the new Z4 at the Z06. It was a tough one. We'll let you slide.
Yeah, a lot of Corvette talk. A lot of numbers going around the Corvette world. And the important one hasn't been discussed. Monthly payment.
Yeah.
What's the lease payment on that?
So, John. Dude,
how many miles do I get to a charge on that?
Yeah. Before we cut, because it is time to get out of here, but
ease on down the road.
And there go the rest of the listeners. Yeah, we've talked about No Driving Gloves starting to try to get out more, do some things. So pitching this to you, I have been diligently working on Lloyd for the last week or so. My 1958 Lloyd that everybody that listens to the show may remember.
It's out of London.
Lloyds of London? No, I don't use them.
I'm thinking the Werewolf of London.
Ooh, Warren Zevon, man. Mm. See, this is what I'm talking about. Music and cars. Music, it just all goes together. But...
My original podcast.
Cars and music?
Cars, cigars, and guitars.
Oh, there you go. So where I'm headed with this, John, is that at the Chattanooga Motor Car Festival this year, there is a sport custom class. And yours truly and 1958 Lloyd, simply known as Lloyd in this household, are going to be attending the show, and Lloyd will be in the sport custom class. So once again, I will be at the Chattanooga Motor Car Festival, and I don't know, maybe, just maybe, No Driving Gloves needs to have a presence at Chattanooga this year. Maybe we should do a special show from the Chattanooga Motor Car Festival.
Let's talk about that off air. I got to look at some dates, but that's a good possibility. Speaking of which, I have been contacted by the Chattanooga Motor Car Festival about it being on the show.
Look at that. Look at that. It's a perfect segue.
And we do have an upcoming interview in September with an author of a new DeLorean biography. That's been confirmed, and we will have the author on live to discuss that detail as we approach.
So, all the powdery details.
See, Derek's already rubbing me the wrong way, but then again, what would a guy know? 64 and a half Mustang.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining us tonight. And as always, we appreciate you listening. We appreciate the No Driving Gloves community over here at New Gloves. And as always, guys, if you want to help the show, a couple things you can do. Number one, there's the wonderful QR code thingy that you can see on the screen if you're watching the live stream. Click on that. Buy us a coffee. Buy us 50 coffees, buy us 100 coffees, whatever you feel is appropriate, really. And that will help the show. And of course, if you want to see the No Driving Gloves community grow and you want to see No Driving Gloves become, you know, the best automotive podcast, the number one automotive podcast in the world, then there's something you got to do for us. And as you guys know, that is as simple as help us grow. Share the show.
And Derek's ready for me to comment. I just want to thank all the listeners out there. Our 30-day growth is 40%, and we can't do it without you and you sharing the show. But I don't care about that now, because you know what time it is. Get off your ass. Go burn some gas, because we are out. Later, everyone.
This show was a part of the No Driving Gloves Network. Produced and edited by John Viviani of Magic City Podcast, with voice work by Gary Conger. So until the next exit.